It is time we check in with the city of Bloomington. The deputy mayor is our good friend, Mick Renheisen. Mick, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Glass. Good morning, Keith.
Morning.
Nice job on your Masters prediction. They play all 72 holes for a reason, and Jordan Spieth almost snuck in the back door and stole the golf tournament. His 64 on Sunday tied the Masters low round and saw him finish third as Patrick Reed is your green jacket champion, the 220th major champion in history. Exciting tournament up till about the last 45 minutes on Sunday because Patrick Reed earned it on Friday and Saturday playing lights out golf.
Yeah, he really didn't break, did he? You have to give him a lot of credit because the pressure was on the back nine with Jordan and Ricky Fowler making a run at him. But congratulations to Patrick. Great event to watch on TV. I don't know that I missed any of the coverage. I taped a lot and watched it later on various days.
I'm still exhausted.
Very exciting.
I'm worn out from watching all of it. It was great. And the Masters, the first major in the books. But we've got plenty to do this morning. Keith, you've got the whole list there of going on.
Well, Mick, it's a veritable fertile ground. Yes,
of stuff to tackle. Let's start with the one thing that I was on your case for earlier this morning, and I do it to your face because that's what we do here. I'm not taking shots at you guys. I'm just curious. We saw an article in today's paper about the council meeting and how the development of the IU Health property is going to move along. A great job of illustrating how the money is going to be paid off in installments, making sure the council signed off on these payments moving forward. That was part of last night's meeting. But the part that got me itchy and concerned was the quotes from Philippa Guthrie. And I'm not asking you to speak for Philippa, but this is what was printed in the paper. The plans are not for the city to own this, maybe parts of it. This is not going to be a big city complex, probably. To me, that sends about 10 different messages there. Can you help me translate that?
Well, I'll try.
And, thank you. That's all we ask.
And, you know, lawyers couch their words carefully.
They
as
do.
They need to leave all options open from,
and they
from
have.
The deputy mayor. And I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, I'm going to speak differently than Philippa would and should speak differently as she should representing, you know, the city in her role. So I think you all know we have the Urban Land Institute in town this week, and they're going to deliver their presentation about what, in their analysis, might be some potential ways to repurpose the site when we acquire it from IU Health. And just to make sure all the facts are on the table, IU Health's not going anywhere until they get their new campus built over on the east side of town on the bypass where the golf course driving range is today. So they will not move, and nothing that we're doing now influences anything going on to provide health care to our community until the day that they close the doors at the current site, move to the new site. That's step one. So that's at the earliest, the end of 2020, and most likely into 2021 before IU Health moves. Second, IU Health has insisted on tearing down the main hospital building as we know it, the one that delivers health care, the emergency room, the administration side, everything but two buildings on the hospital proper site will be removed as part of the agreement at the insistence of IU Health. The city has 1 year to decide whether we want to keep the old KOHR, Core Administration Building on First and Rogers, and the parking structure, one, both, or none. So we have a year from basically now to do our due diligence, to use the ULI process and what they determine might be good uses for those buildings and the entire site, and do our own public engagement discussions, which I'll want to say will be more coming after the ULI process. This isn't the only time we'll have public input. This is just the beginning of that. And then after all that information is amassed, we will start to try to figure out what's the best use for that site in the future. So because we don't know what the community will suggest should happen, because we don't know what ULI suggests, I think it was fair for Philippa to say last night, we probably won't have a public use for it, but we don't know.
And well, the way you say it makes more sense.
Well, I've had more time to think about it after that, you know, discussion, and it was a council-led discussion last night, not a Mick and Glass and Keith conversation to our community. So, you know, I think that's fair. If you just read that, you would go, well, what does the city really think
you're going to do? So the point right now is there's nothing firm you have carved in stone of how this is going to move forward because you don't know what that, being the community, wants to move forward.
Right. And also, we do know some things that I think are important for the community to know, too. That this is the city is not going to buy all 24 acres and make it into something that the city owns, controls. And we're not developers, right? We're gonna go out and ask people who are in that world after we give direction from our public input processes that what we think makes sense to go there, what we'd like to incentivize maybe to go there, whether that's public infrastructure, roads, you know, water, like all those things that we would normally do to get a project ready for development. We may influence what happens there. We want to influence what happens there. We want to guide it, but we won't be the actual developers of it, and you won't see, like, new City Hall pop up over on the hospital or something like that.
Now, Mick, the Urban Land Institute, they're preliminary. It's a preliminary report, correct? Tomorrow at 9 o'clock at City Hall?
Yes. So they've spent the week, and Keith, I know you were one of our stakeholders, along with 100 other people, had the chance to talk to the ULI panelists on Tuesday. We sent the ULI panelists a briefing book that amassed a whole lot of information about the community, about IU Health, about the surrounding neighborhoods to the site. They're digesting all that about economics, demographics, everything that we could shoot to them. They've been analyzing along with the public input. They'll give us a preliminary idea in a presentation at the City Council Chambers tomorrow at 9 o'clock until 10:30, and it's open to the public. So we welcome people who want to come and see what the expert panelists think are some potential uses.
What's the next part of what they do for the city after the preliminary report?
I want to say also, if you can't make it to that meeting tomorrow, recognize these people come from all over the country and they have travel schedules. So why 9 o'clock? Because they have to get out of town by noon up to the Indy Airport, back to their communities. So this is going to be on CATS, and it will be obviously archived. So you can go back, and if you want to live stream it, you can do that tomorrow. If you want to go back and watch it later, that presentation will be on there. In about 6 weeks, we'll get their final written report that, you know, more thoroughly explains what their thoughts are about the site. After that, the city will be starting to set up another series of steps. We haven't identified them yet. We're going to wait for this first step, process the information we get. And because we have plenty of time to do this, it's 2018, nobody's going anywhere until at least 2021, we want to be thoughtful about how we get more public input from this point forward before we start to decide how to repurpose the 24 acres when we actually acquire the property after IU Health moves.
Now, Mick, last night the first step for the city was a committee of the whole meeting of the city council to actually okay the purchase of the land from IU Health. The meeting was disrupted, and there's pictures. So talk about that and what happened there and what the city is thinking about doing going forward. Because earlier in the week, we had Councilman Jim Sims on talking about, you know, they can't have their meetings disrupted and conduct city business.
So the city council, it's their meetings, and they have a protocol, and that protocol was announced at the beginning of the meeting to make it clear to the public that in that particular session last night, because it was a special committee of the whole discussion, there was not public comment on any other topic other than the one agenda item, which was the hospital purchase agreement. So that was announced numerous times at the beginning, and it was also mentioned that next week, a normal session of the city council, there will be public comment, 20 minutes in the front end, 20 minutes in the back end, open to anything and everything that the community would like to talk about. After the city administration, Philippa Guthrie, Jeff Underwood, presented the purchase agreement details, and the council started asking questions, a member of the audience began disrupting the meeting. And the presider over the meeting, Councilman Dave Rallo, mentioned numerous times politely to ask the disruptor to cease and desist. They didn't do that. They were told, if you don't cease and desist, we'll adjourn the meeting and we'll be asking our sergeant-at-arms to remove you. So that's what happened. It was very polite. No one was touched or escorted out. The disruptor walked out on his own accord, and the meeting continued and business was conducted as it should have been. So that's a city council meeting. They have to make the decision about next week or any other city council meeting how they'll proceed with their protocol. But that is my understanding of city council protocol, that you know, there are times when public comment is, most of the meetings are that way, allowed, but you can't just interrupt some other item of business because, you know, you don't want that item of business to go through, or you want to disrupt the city's business, which obviously has to be accomplished as well.
Mick Renneisen is our guest this morning. He checks in from the city of Bloomington's deputy mayor's office. And we know also that plenty of people are I don't want to say upset. I don't think that's the right word. There is a price for progress. The price is getting all these road construction projects and everything else going. Is there going to be some kind of retooling, reordering, rescheduling? What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking that question. To anybody driving our roads, anytime there's a project, any one project, that changes your pattern of going from point A to point B as fast as you can, as efficiently as you can get there, and it disrupts your route, you're upset. And then when you see multiple projects going on, the inevitable and obvious question is anybody talking to everybody else about why they're all going on at the same time? Another fair question. So I just wanted everyone out there that's listening to know, yes, we have discussions about these, and we have them frequently. In fact, the city's called two meetings in the last month with the school corporation, who's impacted by these transportation infrastructure projects, the county, who has projects going, the city, the transit department, and utilities. All of those people have been around the table talking about each of their start dates, the impacts, and the timing, remembering that these road projects are dynamic, right? So you start one, and you run into something unexpected. And that changes that schedule. They're not carved in stone. They all have kind of a window of time beginning to end. Some hopefully will end faster. Some may have to be pushed back if there's more problems that you occur when you dig in the ground. And then there's weather. Weather's always a factor. It's accounted for in any project schedule. But if you have 15 days of rain in a row, nobody can account for that. So I'm just pointing out that there are variables that make these projects dynamic. So yes, we've been coordinating. We're about to put together a pretty significant announcement about steps that all these entities that have been working together are going to take to try to mitigate and minimize the impact of the road infrastructure that's underway. So let's just kind of walk through quickly each one of those road infrastructure projects. I'm not going to get into a great deal of detail because it's 6 pages worth.
That's exactly right. There's a lot
of
information.
There's a lot of moving parts. So we all know, number one, that I-69 is 2 years behind.
Right.
So we can't control that. It is what it is. It's impacted all these other projects that are starting, wouldn't have started now, at least altogether, if I-69 would have gotten done on time. Logical question to ask, then why don't you delay these? Because they're tied to a funding source that has to be spent in a certain year. Can't control that either. It is what it is. Or if you do choose to delay them, we had a conversation about the utility sewer infrastructure project at Grimes the other day. What would it cost to delay it a year? $350,000. I don't think anybody in the public thinks that's a good use of, in this case, ratepayer dollars, to move a project a year for a couple of week overlap that might be difficult on our traffic, but not for $350,000, right? So we're weighing all these variables in our discussion as we put together what we hope to be a pretty coordinated and collaborative plan. We're accelerating some projects. I want to thank the county commissioners. And the county staff the other day, they have a bridge project going on now. It's the first one that's causing some of the disruption in our community down on Winslow Country Club. And that bridge project, the city and the county have agreed to accelerate it by offering some incentive pay to the contractor so that that project can finish more quickly. So you can see we are taking extra efforts and collaboratively working with our counterparts at the county. Had conversations with NDOT. What can they do to help mitigate some of the challenges? Most of these are east-west roads that are causing problems because it's hard to get east-west as it is in Bloomington. It's more difficult now that I-69 is under construction on every major intersection, second, third, Tap, Rockport, all of those. So long story short, for the moment, coordination is going on. Discussions have been held, and I think decisions are going to be announced here in the next week or so to make sure that the public knows. Now, remember, once we start these and say this is the plan today, the next week it could change because of dynamics that we can't predict. What we'll do is make sure the public is updated on a regular basis, and I would urge people to follow the detour signs. Don't go the way you always go and then get mad because it's backed up. It's going to get backed up. This summer is going to be difficult to move around, particularly east to west. We're going to do the best we can to minimize that. And then I hope if everyone can look a year from now, I-69 will be done. We all hope, we think.
Yeah.
These road projects will
be done. This part.
Yeah, this part, that's correct. this part that's affected Bloomington for a long time. these road projects will be done, and it will be much better and easier to get around than it has been for quite a long time.
And don't
temporary pain, long-term gain. I know it's hard to think about that in the moment, but hopefully the announcements we're all getting ready to make in our respective courts coming up soon will help people see the coordination efforts that are happening.
And don't forget Facebook Town Hall today. The City of Bloomington's website, Adam Wason, the Director of Public Works, will have all of your questions answered, Mick. How about that? Mr. Wason will be up there raring to go. The city's Facebook page will have that for you starting at noon today.
And I'm a big advocate of the Waze app, by the way. I don't know how many people know about that one or use it, but that's a phenomenal app powered by social media and people out actually driving and experiencing backups and conditions.
Yes, so they tell you, please don't text and drive, but if you have to update the Waze, it's fine. Go ahead and you're stuck in traffic. Here, I'll give you a Waze update, Mick. Every road is busy from 4 until about 6 o'clock, so that's I don't think there's any way around that.
And that's another good point. You know, it's the worst at the commuter times, the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, no surprise.
Leave earlier and give yourself more time to get there. Don't make it a you problem, which I've suggested.
There you go.
Too many times to count. How about some bicentennial trivia for us?
You got it. Bicentennial question this week, and just want to acknowledge that both the city and county had their celebration events the last 2 days. The county held theirs on the 10th, and the city held theirs last night, and a lot of people attended both of those, so happy 200th to the city and the county. And our question for that is, her Redemption series of books takes place in Bloomington. What's the name of this author? Is it A, Meg Cabot, B, Margaret Haddix, C, Karen Kingsbury, or D, Haven Kimmel? Redemption series of books.
I have absolutely no idea, so I'm going to learn something today.
Ah,
Keith is giving me a quizzical look.
Two or three.
Well, you always guess C when you don't know the answer.
Yeah, I'll say Karen.
Karen Kingsbury is correct, Keith. Well done.
Thank you.
Karen is the author of the Redemption series, which does take place in Bloomington, and actually a bench on the Beeline Trail. So now people who walk by and go, who's Karen Kingsbury, that don't know that she's an author, there's a trail bench on the Beeline that was dedicated in June of 2010.
Cool. Excellent job. Mick, we always appreciate your time. The City of Bloomington's website is updated and ready to go. Follow along on social. You can catch Adam Wason at noon today answering anybody's questions on traffic and all the other good stuff that's happening. So good job putting that information out there, and thanks for the translations this morning. We appreciate it.
Anytime. And a little shout out to your listeners. I discovered you have some listeners where I get my haircut, and they say you ask good questions and you treat me well, but you also put me to the screw sometimes. So see, even folks at my where my hair is cut are noticing that you don't take it easy on me, so I appreciate
they have
that.
They have the razor, Mick. I just have a microphone, so I think it's a fair thing, and we appreciate you facing whatever the music is. But people want to know, and sometimes as we talk about, this gives us room to expand maybe where some other formats we have to have it within 280 characters or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Good job. We appreciate it. Mick Renheisen, that's why he joins us every Thursday morning. It's good
clarity.
Stuff.
Clarity.
Well, it is. It is a translation because there is legalese, there is governmentese, there is. And if they want to be transparent, that's one of their tenets of their government. And this regime, I don't want to say regime in a bad way, but what's going on over there, this is transparency. And he has said it before, and I will say it again. You might not like what they say, but at least you're getting an explanation of what it is.